The Producer and Screen Actors Guilds have spoken. We're going to talk about what those wins mean for what will happen on Oscar night.
Plus, we'll have another edition of Late to the Party and talk about the pop culture it took us a little while to get to.
And we return to Sean's House of Hyperbole.
The greatest house of hyperbole ever. And of course, the big sell, it's all ahead on Inside Pop. Okay, it's time for another awards update. My name is Sean David Johnson, and I'm a podcaster. And I say it that dramatically because it's my favorite way to begin an award ceremony.
I love that, yes.
The Screen Actor Guild Awards were held this past weekend, and thank goodness Amita Patel, who is also a podcaster and my wonderful co-host, there were some friggin' surprises.
Yeah, this is an exciting award show to watch. I was going to, you know, maybe like join it a little bit later and get to some big awards at the end. But then I ended up watching it from the beginning and I was just like, this is so fun. Everybody's beautiful. And, you know, right from the beginning, there was a couple of surprises and lots of passion in this room for many reasons.
It's the best award ceremony so far this year. Better than the Golden Globes, without a doubt, in my opinion. I for two reasons. One, people were being political. People were made really political, but not just kind of yammering to hear themselves speak. People were saying really heartfelt, meaningful, timely things. And then, as I just said, there were surprises and people who you didn't expect to win won. So let's get into it. And everyone was beautiful. And maybe we do need to talk about that a little bit later because there were some fine-looking actors at the Screen Actors Guild. Okay, so let's talk about some of the surprises. Hidden Figures won for Best Ensemble, which is basically their best picture. They award the best ensemble cast, and that's their equivalent of best picture. Hidden Figures, I think a lot of people thought it would be Moonlight. La La Land was actually not nominated, so I think everyone was excited that some other movie had a chance to win. Yeah, so Hidden Figures, which, and I think the audience went crazy. The audience of actors were very happy about that win because that movie is packed with great actors, newbies like Janelle Monáe, old-timers like Kevin Costner, I guess we have to call him an old-timer, and everyone in between. And it is a stellar cast, and the movie is so entertaining. And you know me, I love Moonlight. I want it to win every award imaginable. But I wasn't angry at the Hidden Figures win.
I wasn't either. I was pleasantly surprised. You could feel everybody in the room was just so excited for this film to win. Viola Davis was on her feet. Everybody was so happy this film won. Because, as you said, it's an incredible group of actors. I think this was a true ensemble. I think maybe Moonlight, you know, it was in three different parts. And so the entire cast actually didn't interact. And in Hidden Figures, for the most part, there was interaction between lots of actors of great performances. So really, really excited for Hidden Figures to get continued success. And this was kind of like a cherry on the top of that cake.
Black women doing math, people. That's all you're getting. And it's winning awards. I love it.
Yeah, I love the end of Taraji's speech. She's like, we are Hidden Figures no more. And that's it. That's the point. So
actually, Amita, she yelled, we are Hidden Figures no more. Taraji was, she was one part church sermon, one part, you know, final speech by Braveheart. She was giving you serious, fierce drama elocution. She was great. A little crazy. I love that she shows you her little, like, a little bit of crazy.
Yes, but I wouldn't expect any less from her. That's the thing. Like, that's her realness. Yeah. And she does not care, but she still comes off still like classy with a little sass, which I aim for every day.
Yeah. And although I will say this, when they first won and she was marching towards the stage, I actually yelled at the TV, keep it classy, Taraji. You can do it. Keep it classy. Because she was threatening to, let's say, not be the classiest. But she's the best. I love her. I also love that Mahershala Ali and Janelle Monáe had two chances to win. They had two chances to win.
I know.
They could have won for Moonlight or they could have won for Hidden Figures. So I'm so happy that
embarrassment
happened.
Of riches for the two of them.
Yeah, they deserve it. I love Janelle Monáe so much, it almost hurts.
No, I love her more.
I've loved her since she was Cindy Mayweather, the Archandroid.
Tightrope, y'all. It's all about tightrope.
So another great surprise was Denzel Washington winning for Best Actor. He's actually joked about the fact that he's not going to win anything because Casey Affleck's going to run away with it. This is exciting because it makes Oscar night a little bit more interesting. Maybe Casey Affleck won't win.
Maybe, you know, I kind of got really excited when I heard his name, and so did the entire room again. Everybody was so excited, and he was definitely shocked. His speech was fantastic as well. He couldn't give enough props to his entire cast, and he made something really sweet. And he was just like, nobody talks about the other actors with smaller roles, but they are so important to a film. And that, I thought, was such a, you know, it just makes you love Denzel even more. You know, he knows how to, like, call out the entire ensemble and make sure that they are also recognized. And it's not just about his performance.
We were able to predict some of the winners, but I'm still happy with those. Viola Davis won, as we discussed.
Yes.
Mahershala Ali won for Best Supporting Actor, which made me very happy. And talk about speech. For me, he gave the speech of the week, of the month, because he never mentioned Trump's name. He never mentioned the specifics of what's happening this week.
No.
But his personal story said everything that needed to be said.
Oh, so much. And he was like moved to tears just to say it. It was so emotional.
How amazing for us at this moment. And listen, I don't want to err on the side of giving pop culture too much power, because when it comes down to it, so many more important things going on in the world. But I think for just that moment in time, the fact that a Muslim American was standing up on a stage on live TV, accepting award, not being afraid to say that he was Muslim American.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
So
very powerful,
powerful.
And brave, I think, you know. So it made me love him even more.
Same here.
Superficial comment of the podcast. He may also have been the best dressed of the night.
White tux, though. Yes. Hashtag that white tux, though.
He's been killing it. All awards ceremony. He's been killing it all. Do Google Mahershala Ali red carpet, and every single look from October till now has been on point.
Yes.
Love Lily Tomlin speech. I know you did.
Oh, I love Lily Tomlin, and I love, you know, they don't call it a Lifetime Achievement Award. They call it the Life Achievement Award. And God bless Dolly Parton. Can we just talk about how adorable she is? She just kept going on and on and on and was super funny. And she introduced Lily Tomlin, and then they showed this package of all Lily Tomlin's great performances, and it just like brought me back. Like, I didn't watch Laugh-In when it actually aired, but I watched reruns of it, and I loved her as the operator. Oh my gosh, I loved her as the operator. And the little girl in the big chair, that was like
Edith.
I think like early forms of comedy for me as a child to really laugh out loud to. So it was so fun to see those clips again. And then I've seen the first season of Grace and Frankie, and I thought the both of them, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, are hilarious in that show. So it was really, really fun, and her speech was great.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Lily Tomlin. I saw her live, well, I think when I was in college. She was touring with The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, and it was great to see her on the stage performing that seminal show written by her partner, Jane Wagner. She's the best. And a treasure.
Yeah, definitely Google her speech. She gives some really fun advice to actors in the room.
And then I would just say the last thing that I have to say about the SAG Awards, the final word in the SAG Awards. The Stranger Things win was also fun. And that actor, he was one part Coach Taylor, one part Aragorn about to attack the orcs in Return of the King. But again, no time to be wimpy or quiet or afraid. Be loud and powerful and inspiring. That's what we want from you guys right now.
Yeah, if anybody wants to look that up, his name's David Harbour. He's awesome. He plays the cop in Stranger Things. And really, I was a little distracted by Winona Ryder's facial expressions because I don't think she really expected him to say anything. And I was like, Winona, just keep it together. And like every 5 seconds, she'd be like, make a random face. And I was like, Winona, he's being so impassioned right now. Just let him be.
By the time this podcast is airing, I'm sure there will have been 1 billion memes of Winona Ryder's facial tics and reactions.
And then also the kids were so excited. Oh, they were just jumping up and down in excitement. That was adorable.
Yeah, I'll say I'm happy about the fact that they actually seem to genuinely like each other, because I always worry that maybe behind the scenes, Dustin doesn't like this one, but it seems like they're all actually friendly and happy, so that's good. They're bordering on slight overexposure. I need to not see them for at least 4 months before the show comes back on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want those characters, but I need those kids to not be around for a while. You feel me?
I get
you.
I totally feel you. And I think now that the award season is kind of tapered down, that's possible. We'll see. All right. Well, this wasn't the only awards that were given out. The Producers Guild Awards were also held this past weekend. And to remind you all, this Producers Guild that both Sean and I are members of is actually a very good predictor of who could win Best Picture at the Oscars. 19 of the previous 27 winners of the Producers Guild Award for Best Motion Picture went on to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Yes. Last year was an exception. The PGA chose The Big Short, but the Oscars chose Spotlight. So it's not guaranteed, but it's, again, interesting. What's not interesting, in my opinion, is that the Producers Guild chose La La Land as the winner, which almost everyone else has been doing. So it looks like La La Land is going to run away with it on Oscar night. Fine.
I'm holding out hope. I'm holding out for the same thing that happened last year. They said La La Land, and Oscar says Moonlight.
Are you rooting for Moonlight?
My optimism is back, Sean. Yes.
I like it. Okay. I didn't know. Yeah. I thought you might be rooting for Lion, because we all know that you have a personal, not just a personal connection, but you also believe in the artistic merits of that film. So I thought you might have been rooting for Lion.
I would root for Lion. I root for Lion every day. But it's not winning anything. So when it comes to the competitive nature of myself, I'm going to go with the fact that the odds are between La La Land and Moonlight right now. And La La Land might have a lead. Those Vegas guys might say La La Land. But I'm holding out hope that maybe Moonlight will make a nice last minute showing.
I think if anything, and I guess we're going to have a whole episode where we predict the Oscars, although I might want to boycott that episode. No, I feel like if anything, Moonlight, Barry Jenkins, they might give Barry Jenkins Best Director. But I don't see how La La Land's not going to win. I mean, I've said this before. La La Land is about Hollywood, starring two of our most cherished white actors. It's going to win. But I'll say it now. Don't let these awards affect how you feel about the movies when you see them, right? Moonlight may not win. Lion may not win. And I say this to each other, ourselves, and to all of the listeners. When it comes down to it, it's fun. It's a way for studios to make money and for publicists to work with their actors and directors. But first and foremost, be a film fan. Love the movie-going experience. And don't care too much about the awards.
This public service announcement has been brought to you by Sean David Johnson.
I'm on my soapbox, and I may not like step it. Down until February 27th, 2019.
There's always like one moment of like the more you know, or you know, that after school special moment that one of us will eventually get to in an episode. This time, it's you.
But really, I made that speech, and I'm really speaking to myself because I do believe that. But listen, I get into it. Oh my gosh, Moonlight, you know, just won the Critics Circle. So now it's going to win. You know, I get into it too, but I do want to remind myself that before all these awards, which, Amita, you don't get anything if your favorite movie wins an Oscar. I don't get anything if Moonlight wins Best Director, Best Picture. But what I did get from seeing that movie and from seeing it again, because I'm definitely going to see it for a third time, is the joy of movie going. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say. In a way, who cares what wins? But what matters is how you feel about the film. And my speech is done.
Right, but we're still going to predict the Oscars, and we're going to do an Oscar podcast too. So don't like worry. Like, we do care for the sake of the podcast.
We care. No, we care for the sake of helping you win your Oscar pool and winning some money. Yeah.
Yes, and hopefully we will too. P.S. That third time you're going to see Moonlight, I'm coming. Right.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's. Oh yeah, we've never seen it together. No. Well, now I have the. I mean, I have the screener, so I might just see it. Over and over and over and over and over.
Sleepover. Okay, sorry.
Right, exactly. Moonlight on loop. That may not be a fun sleepover.
No.
That might be the saddest sleepover
one
has ever. Can you imagine if your teenager had a sleepover? All right, guys, we're going to watch Moonlight now.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, teenagers should watch Moonlight.
But yeah.
Older teenagers.
I was going to say, of a certain age, yes. All right. Well,
okay.
We digress quite a bit, but we will get back to the award show at hand. We were talking about the Producers Guild Awards. They also give out awards for TV shows, and I have to admit, we were spot on, just because some of the top shows of our list for the top 10 of the year were also winners at the Producers Guild Awards. Stranger Things won for episodic drama, Atlanta won for episodic comedy, and The People versus O.J. Simpson won for long form TV series. So I'm just saying, we know what we're talking about.
Now I'm looking back trying to remember what I voted for. I'm sure I voted for all those.
I did vote for all those.
I only vote for winners. Okay.
Definitely say I voted
so. Producers Guild Awards, good job. We'll see if you continue to predict the Oscars. All will be revealed in late February.
I can't wait.
So, Amita, do we have any other awards coming up before the Oscars that we need to care about?
Yeah, the Directors Guild Awards are actually going to be handed out next weekend. So we'll definitely keep track of that, and we'll update you guys in next week's episode and make sure that you can fill out the chart that's, you know, taped to your wall in your bedroom that you probably look at every night before you go to sleep so that you can do your Oscar pool perfectly. Because I know that that's what we have in our bedrooms. But just so you know, we'll let you know next week what you need to know about the Directors Guild Awards so you're in the know.
Now you know.
I was waiting for it. Okay, it is time for another edition of Late to the Party. This is where we discuss the pop culture it took us a little while to check out.
Over the past couple of weeks, each of us have had the chance to check out some pop culture that may have already peaked, but it doesn't prevent us from finally getting to it and possibly enjoying it. So let's talk about some of the pop culture that we were both late to the party getting to. Amita, why don't you start? Give me one late to the party success story of yours.
You know, I think it stemmed from you putting this show on your top 10 TV list, Black Mirror.
Mm.
After you talked about it, it was one of those things that everybody was talking about. And I was like, yeah, Sean mentioned that show. And now I hear all these other people are like, you have to watch Black Mirror. And I think if people have listened to this podcast, I can sometimes be coerced from just things like that. And I was. And I checked it out. And I'm also a rule follower in the respect that I need to start at the beginning.
And Sean, you know, kept me calm. And he's like, the first season is 3 episodes. It's doable.
Oh, and I remember saying to you, and Joj also says this, don't binge it. Like, just watch one episode at a time.
Yes, and that is very true. And you did tell me that. And I'm really glad that I did that, especially after season one, episode one. That was...
the national anthem.
Oh, my gosh. So terrifying and gross.
I wonder if there's anyone listening who doesn't know what Black Mirror is. Possibly.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a anthology series. I guess you could call it sci-fi, but it's really kind of dystopian. And it's basically about, for the most part, takes place in the near future. But each standalone episode is about some type of facet of technology that we are utilizing or we might utilize in a destructive way. Is that, yeah, it's kind of what that's about. It's like the Twilight Zone for the 21st century.
Definitely.
Yeah. And the thing that I, well, you have to tell me, but we were talking about this offline, and one of the great things about Black Mirror is all of the episodes are so different that I think everyone has their favorite episode. Everyone differs on what episodes they love, what episodes they like, what episodes they don't really feel. So it's almost like a Rorschach test. Which episodes of Black Mirror do you like? What does it say about you?
Yeah.
So what have you enjoyed, Amita?
Well, I am not fully through it. I'm in the middle of season two. But the last episode of season one, which is History of Your Life, I don't remember the name of the title, but it's basically terrifying futuristic things that somebody could figure out and do, where these people have like these, simply said, contact lenses in their eyes where they can rewind and play back things that they had seen, like their lives. So I walk into a dinner party and I see somebody across the room and I can go back later and be like, oh, I noticed some body language between the two of them and they don't look like they're, you know, fighting. They look really attracted to each other or something like that, which is one of the examples in the show. But it was crazy how you can go back and analyze, you know, and rewind important things in your life and then over obsess about them in a crazy way, which is what this episode did. And it was really scary.
I like the fact that, and it happens, I think, in the second season, also in the third season. There are also a couple of really terrifying episodes about technology. And then there are also a couple of episodes that are really heartwarming and scary in a different way. But I love that the series just has such a range of emotion and a range of tone. When I think about Black Mirror now, sadly, one thing that I think about is how the brilliant creator, Charlie Brooker,
mm-hmm.
I read an article, an interview with him about 7 or 8 months ago, and he basically predicted that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. He was like, yeah, Trump's going to win. And he's like, I'm not saying that he should win. I'm actually saying that he shouldn't, but yeah, Trump's going to win. And it's not that he can see the future, but he does write about the way society's heading. And he also went through Brexit, so he was pretty confident about that. But he's a really smart guy. I think he was also a comedy writer in the UK before he started creating Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great show. So what's it like being late to the party with Black Mirror, Amita? So have you found other people who you can talk about, who people like me who've seen it already, are they still willing to talk to you about it?
Yes. One of our friends who's we've had on the show before, Caroline Hand, she and I are currently working together. So I had actually told her to watch it when I watched it, and then she got mad at me after seeing the first episode. She's like, I'm not watching this again. And I said, no, keep going. And she finished the whole thing already before me and is obsessed. And then I have met somebody who's British, actually. And he's like, oh, yeah, I saw that 4 years ago. And I was like, wait, that's even crazier. I mean, 4 years ago, it's not that long technology-wise. But it is almost crazier that all of this interesting... So it's also interesting social commentary, you know? Just, you know, Caroline actually brought this up, that there's this one in that same episode about the history of your life. There's a dinner party and these people are sitting at the table and this one girl doesn't have the rewind thing implanted. And everyone stares at her like she's crazy. And like, how do you deal with that? And she's like, isn't that almost like the same conversation if somebody is at a dinner party and says, oh, I'm not on Facebook.
Right, right.
You know, and there was just like these subtle things that you can really pull out from the way that they tell these stories. You know, another thing that I gathered from it is like the way that they decide to like craft each story is that it starts off, oh, this is weird. Oh, it's getting kind of crazy. Oh, this is outrageous. And then they just do like this term that's just like, what the fuck?
Right, right. You know, for me, it's just this validation or vindication because I feel like I am old school in certain ways. You know, I'm just like, if you're out with friends, everyone takes out their phones. Everyone keeps their phones. You know, it's I feel like that episode, especially the one that you're talking about, like that is us now. That is the present. Like we've really become addicted to technology. And Black Mirror does a really good job of shining a light on that. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. for better or for worse, we're pretty much addicted. And this is how it's going to affect our lives, possibly. You know, and yeah, it's really smart. And I think of each episode as like a great short story.
Yeah, 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 definitely. There was definitely some that I wasn't as into. And it's interesting to see, and I think we talked about this offline, that like I was not into the second episode of season one. I was like, I didn't like it that much. And so did a couple other people I talked to. Like, yeah, that was weird. I was like, I almost didn't want to continue with it because that was just, it was not, I didn't love it. And you said you liked that episode.
I think it's my second favorite of the entire, so far. I'm in season three now. I've really been taking my time with season three. But yeah, I think it's my second or third favorite. If you go, after you watch all of the episodes, go online, just Google Black Mirror episodes ranked, and everyone's done it. Esquire and Collider.
Wow.
And it's, there isn't one list that's the same. This show really does affect people in different ways, which is very interesting. So,
right.
Well, I'm glad that you're checking it out.
Thanks. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I think that's so interesting how we had such different visceral reactions to certain episodes of the series. And I can't wait to finish it. So, but I will take my time because this thing is...
Savor it.
Yeah, it messes your brain. So is there anything that you have become late to the party on that you want to discuss, Sean?
Yeah, I recently, as in less than 5 days ago, watched Kubo and the Two Strings, which is an animated film. And I have not seen an animated film in the movie theater in a while. As we know, we're both members of the Producers Guild, so I have a whole stack of DVD screeners, and Kubo and the Two Strings was one of them. I was really happy when I received it because one of our podcast friends, Wendell Britt,
yes,
in one of their Tonecast podcast episodes, which seems like half a year ago, was singing the praises of Kubo and the Two Strings. And I was like, oh, I hope I get the screener for this. I need to watch it. Mm-hmm. I wish I had gone to see it in the movie theater because it's one of the most beautiful animated films I've ever seen.
I've heard this from a couple people, and I remember that Tone podcast discussion from Wendell and Nate. And so I was like, I need to check this out. I had seen just about every other animated film, and that was the one I haven't.
Yeah, it's so artful. Just visually, it's a type of anime. I want to do some research because it's not, doesn't seem quite stop motion. It doesn't seem quite computer generated. It seems like a mix of the two. I have to do my research and figure out how they did that. But it's really beautiful, really different. And I think I watched Kubo and Moana within a few days of each other. There were a lot of similarities. Both of them really involve these great hero journeys, which is something the Tone podcast discussed, and really moving, kind of dark and scary and sad, as all good animated films should be at points. You know, get those kids to realize that life isn't all peaches and creams and rainbows and puppy dogs.
Yeah.
So I loved it. I loved it. And I am a little sad that I was late to the party because I would have enjoyed seeing it on the big screen. Mm. So my lesson from Kubo and the Two Strings is if you hear good things about an animated film or any film that you know you'll appreciate seeing it on the large screen, just do it. Go to the theater and see it on the big screen. But I recommend, I'm sure it'll be out on demand, iTunes shortly. Recommend it to everyone, including you, Ms. Patel.
Adding it to the list.
Do it.
and then I will be even later to that party. And we'll discuss that again.
Are there any films that you've been late to the party?
Yeah, definitely. You know, actually, speaking of the Producers Guild Awards, I was scrambling to make sure that I watched as many of the Best Motion Picture nominees to make sure that I was informed and had the most knowledge to be able to vote properly. And so this week got away from me. I only was able to watch one, and I watched Hell or High Water. And I remember you telling me how great it was. Caroline told me how great it was. Some other friends of ours in the guild said how really, really good it was last year when they saw a screening of it. And I liked it. I think that this is one of those examples, and we may have discussed this once before, is that the expectations were way too high from people that I completely trust telling me it was really good. Oh, it was really good. I really liked Hell or High Water. Oh, you have to see it. And then I think I went into it expecting so much more and waiting and waiting and waiting for either a twist or something to happen, which ruined my experience watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it fell a little flat to me. I think the storyline was good. I think the performances were good. Sorry, Jeff Bridges. Oscar nom? I'm not sold on that. He's good. He's always good. But I'm not sold on that particularly.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it's because of the hype or it was the scenario in which I watched it. You know, I think this is a bigger conversation than we can obviously have many times. But, you know, the way that you watch a film and the mind state that you're in, I think completely affects how you interpret that film. And then when you have an added level of expectation and hype, it could really ruin it sometimes.
Yeah, it's tricky, but yeah, because I'm trying to think of an example. Maybe this can be another segment of expectations, because I'm sure you've had experiences where you've gone into a film, you've had really high expectations, and those expectations have been met.
Yes, Moonlight.
Right.
Exhibit A.
So yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's why I love doing this podcast. It's why I love grabbing random strangers on the street and talking to them about film.
But, yeah, you need to stop that. They're scared.
But it is, you know, sometimes I like to think, oh, it's an inherent, like, if you don't understand the brilliance of Moonlight, you're just, but you know, it is also subjective. It's how, it's art, right? It's how the art connects to you and how you take it in. And yeah. And I like what you're saying. You're saying that it's well done. You like it. It's just, but you didn't, yeah, it didn't connect to you. You didn't feel that Jeff Bridges' performance was one of the five best. And yeah, I can respect that. I can respect how you're stating that.
But you saw it and you really, really liked it.
I really liked it. And I think I saw it the way you did. I watched it on a screener, sat in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I liked the fact that it was really straightforward. You know, there weren't twists. There mm-hmm. weren't robots. There weren't. It was straightforward storytelling. I think in the way you think about all of these classic movies from the 70s, for example, like Dog Day Afternoon, or I'm trying to think of other examples, where it was like they would just told stories, but they told stories very clearly and directly. And it kind of reminded me of that. I felt like watching one thing interesting about watching that movie was, oh, it's like the plight of the white male in 2017. Okay. I think that helped me understand a little bit more why there's so many, you know, white men who feel like their lives are falling apart to such an extent that they've got to make a crazy decision and vote for Trump. You know what I'm saying? I think that I think the movie did a really good job of taking two characters who I have never known, never really understood, and made them kind of real and interesting to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you that. It's interesting how you strung it to Trump, but that's okay.
No, it's true. Like, I feel like it's, you know, like you think about like these, like, you know, the stereotypical, prototypical white, middle-aged white men who feel like this country doesn't belong to them anymore the way it used to. And these two characters in Hell or High Water are so emblematic of that.
Yeah. Right?
Their family farm is gone.
Right.
So, yeah, it was, but all that political interpretation, for me, it was just a really good story. I loved the dialogue. It just felt kind of real and gritty and different to me. But
yeah,
totally get why it's not one of your favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. I it was very hard for me to kind of narrow down my top five or six, but it was very easy to put, you know, a movie like this, you know, not in the top five or six because mm-hmm. It just didn't resonate with me. But well done. Well done. It was still well done. So
yeah,
that was my thoughts on Hell or High Water, guys.
Okay.
Anything else for you?
I have one more. Loving, which I wasn't able to go to this Q&A screening that we had for the Producers Guild, and it just took me a while to get around to seeing it. I was excited to see it, and I just wanted to, as you were saying, I wanted to be in the right mindset.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in the right mood. I think this month has been hard on many of us for many reasons, and I just wanted to make sure I was in the right space. And so I finally watched it this week and really loved it. I think I know why it hasn't received as much attention as some other films. It's so quiet and understated, but beautiful and so well done, so well acted. In case, for the people who don't know, Loving is a movie based on the true story of an interracial couple living in Virginia. They were arrested because their marriage broke the anti-miscegenation laws in Virginia. In the 1960s, two people of different races weren't allowed to get married. So they had gone to D.C., got married, moved back to Virginia. They were arrested, kicked out of the state. They came back, got kicked out again, and I don't want to tell you too much, but basically it's history. They sued. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and their case changed the laws and changed history.
Wow.
So it's the story of this important political, historical case, but it's really the story of these two people who didn't want to be heroes, who didn't want to be civil rights activists. They just wanted to live their lives and love each other and raise their family near the rest of their extended family. And it's just pitch perfect.
Yeah, you know, to again echo what you said about watching something in the right mindset, I am getting to a place where I might be ready to watch that film because I saw trailers for it and I definitely wanted to check it out and I feel like it's going to make me cry. So I needed to be in a good cry space for it. And just a little bit of props for that award. It just didn't really catch any awards momentum, but the Producers Guild has a special award called the Stanley Kramer Award, which is meant to honor a production that raises public awareness of an important social issue. So at the PGA Awards last weekend, Loving was awarded the Stanley Kramer Award, which I thought was really incredible. Some other films, if you guys haven't heard of this award, other films that won this were Hotel Rwanda, Precious, and a favorite of mine, Fruitvale Station. So, you know, it's great that I really admire the fact that, you know, the Producers Guild does something like this to honor a film that may not be as popular to some people or as, you know, a big of a hit at the box office, but still has an important message. And I can't wait to see it.
Well deserved, well deserved. I think it is available on iTunes and possibly Amazon this week. So everyone,
awesome,
watch it. And I say this, turn off your phones. Don't go get snacks. Just watch it straight through. I think it's less than 2 hours. Just give the movie the reverence and attention it deserves. I'll say that in my household, the tears did not stop flowing on our couch. And I mean, it felt really resonant to us because, you know, I'm in an interracial relationship. My family's from the South. Chris is from the South. So here we are, you know, this gay couple who are interracial, who are legally married from the South. And we're watching just like 50 years ago, none of that would have been possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, yeah, really impactful and just beautiful. And, you know, again, it like felt like a part of my story. It was being told really beautifully on screen. So a little personal shout out to Loving as well. Thank you very much.
I was wondering that. The next question I was going to ask was, did you watch this with Chris? Because this could be something that was, you know, part of your story. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Very.
Wow. What an incredible movie to watch with him.
Yeah. It was great. It was a, yeah, one of those moments where movies really do a lot, right? Like movies can heal you, make you feel a little bit stronger. Okay. This is my last political comment, Amita.
Yeah.
But I think in an age right now that we're living in, that feels like George Orwell is psychic. But in an age where you can feel kind of disempowered and scared, it's so nice to see stories and remember stories and read stories about moments in our country where things were bad, things were scary, things were wrong, but the bravery and intelligence of people on the right side of history helped to correct those wrongs. So Loving is definitely one of those movies that will hopefully inspire everyone who feels like there are a lot of injustices being done today. You can, you know, two people who didn't want to do anything made a major change. So that's it. I've said my piece.
Well said. I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible with you.
Okay. Oh, I hate it when Amita's trying to be optimistic. Guys, you know, dark times.
No, we're not going to talk about it.
We're not going to talk about it. I mean, everyone should talk about it, but we want this podcast to kind of be just a fun little escape for you, kind of, sort of.
Yes, definitely. We're not going to talk about the plight of immigrants, but... some other interesting pop culture news, which I didn't even tell you that I was going to discuss, but I have to say something, is that some of our favorite artists, the Missy Elliott, released new music. Did you know she released a new video?
I did.
Which is an amazing music video because she's Missy, called I'm Better. And the song is kind of fun. It's like that creep hip hop, which I enjoy, and has like this awesome deep bass that I love. And then Jamiroquai is coming out with new music, y'all. And his song Automaton, it's not Automaton, because when I heard the song, I thought it was Automaton, but it's Automaton, I think is how he says it. The video is kind of weird, but it's cool. And I enjoy the kind of electronic dance kind of feel he's putting together with that. So
cool.
Looking forward to Jamiroquai's new album. I wonder if Missy's gonna put out an album. It's very interesting. She's just put out a couple singles over the last like year.
Over the last four years, it's been single, 6 months, single, 6 months. I want and need and demand an album, Missy.
Well, I mean, not to open up the conversation, but is that just now how she wants to release music? Like, don't get tied to an album, put together a great track and a sick video and just be who she is. That's who she is. And she does it well. So it's just like, I don't need to like spend more time and put it on an album. I'm just going to give you what I want when I have it. And it's great. Take it.
Yeah. You know what? And I think that could work for her. That could work for her creatively, financially. I do like to dream about a scenario where she does release a concept album the way so many of our great artists have recently.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing. Just saying, Missy, that would be great if you did that. But if not, yeah, I think you're right, Amita. This could just be her way of releasing. And you know what? In this age that we're living in, you can go on your Spotify and you can create your Missy album.
Exactly. And I almost did that. I didn't do it. But the thing is that our good friend James Barker was the one who sent me the video. And he was like, new Missy. And I got excited. And it was at work on Friday. And then I got into a little bit of a hole of just listening to that video. And then it just went into on YouTube, just a Missy loop. And so then it was like one after the next hit after hit. Gosh, guys, like Gossip Talks was so good. And I'm really hot. Oh,
so good. Sorry. So like, I was just in Missy heaven on Friday, and I was like, she's such an incredible artist. And then of course that was echoed by Busta Rhymes, Pharrell, and all of these artists, because there's going to be a documentary on Missy Elliott coming out. I don't know when, I don't know where. I'm going to watch it whenever it comes. I'm so excited.
Yep, maybe that'll coincide with at least another new single when the documentary comes out. If not an album, we'll get another new single.
Yeah,
that's great. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was definitely my most exciting music release of the week.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll keep you posted on my doc, guys, because I'll be watching it on repeat.
Yeah.
So I believe it's time. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I think it's time to enter the House of Hyperbole.
Welcome, everyone, to another rare invitation to Sean Johnson's House of Hyperbole. As you may know, this is, again, the rare, it only happens once in a blue moon segment in which I experience something that's so overwhelmingly perfect and wonderful and life-affirming that I have to just enter the House of Hyperbole to talk to you guys about it. So, last week, I was minding my own business, scrolling through Instagram, and I see Nile Rodgers post that he's going to perform at Joe's Pub. This could be an 80-minute soliloquy, but I will say very briefly that Nile Rodgers has had more influence on my musical taste than any other person in the world. He is one of the great producers. I'll just list. He's produced and written for Sister Sledge, Diana Ross, Duran Duran, Madonna. He produced the whole Like a Virgin album. He produced David Bowie's Let's Dance. He's produced Sam Smith, Janelle Monáe, Grace Jones. The list goes on and on and on and on. So as a kid of the 80s, he formed me, right? Everything that I liked and loved, he had a hand in. Starting with, he was a member of Chic, and so Good Times, which I used to roller skate to. I think the very first time I learned how to backward skate, it was to Good Times. So historic. And then, of course, everyone should know this, the Sugar Hill Gang sampled Good Times, and that's the beat under Rapper's Delight. So everything great in dun 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 dun. That's Good Times, and it's Rapper's Delight.
Oh, yeah, so, it is. These are the good times. All right, sorry.
Yeah. So seriously, I love this man's music, and many people probably know him from his work most recently with Daft Punk, right?
Yes.
Grammy winning, million, gazillion selling. So I love Nile Rodgers more than any. Like, I mean, if you would say to me, Prince, Michael Jackson, yeah, sure. No, I love them. They're some of my favorite performers. But Nile Rodgers rises to the top because of the diversity of his work with these artists. So anyway, the show was sold out. I showed up. Prayed to the pop culture gods, got a ticket, and went to the show. The ticket I bought was in the front row, somehow.
Yeah, I cannot even imagine the high you must have been on.
I was so giddy. I was texting Amita and then a few of our other friends, and I knew I didn't want to be obnoxious about it, but I just had to send them a couple of texts about how joy-filled I was. And it
he
was
cursed,
really...
y'all. He cursed.
I did curse, and I never curse, rarely. So it was amazing, Mita. Basically, it was this incredible, not one man show, because he had a backup female singer and a keyboardist, and he played guitar. And he told stories, and then he'd play a song. So he talked about writing "I'm Coming Out" for Diana Ross, and how it was inspired by a time when he went to a transvestite bar in the late 70s and saw that it was filled with Diana Ross impersonators. And he was like, shh, I need to write her a gay anthem. I need to write Diana. He was working with her at the time. I need to write basically for what James Brown's "I'm Black and I'm Proud" is to black people. I need to write her a gay anthem, an anthem that will be that for gay people. And he wrote, "I'm coming out." And so like basically every, he would tell a story and they would perform the song. He talked about working with David Bowie, performed a David Bowie song. It was phenomenal. It was like a masterclass in the life of this great music writer and producer. And basically he did this because he's writing a Broadway musical about his life, and all of these songs will be the music in the musical. So you know who's going to be there on opening night? This one.
Yes.
This guy right here. Anyway, I already have a Best of Nile Rodgers playlist on Spotify, so I'm going to share that in the show notes. I invite everyone, just check it out. He's just done so many great songs in pop music.
He has.
Yeah. So we can leave the House of Hyperbole. I just thank you for letting me share that with you. It's one of my great musical experiences of the past X number of years. So it was amazing.
I have to say, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe any of it when you told me. And I was so, so happy for you, frankly, because I know how much you love Nile Rodgers. Doing a little research, he also is getting a solo musical excellence award from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Deserved.
It is. The interesting thing is, and we'll put a link in the notes to this, is that he actually, he reacted interestingly to it because he would have rather Chic be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like Chic was snubbed, and he actually spoke about it to Rolling Stone. So the article is very, very interesting. And it's not like he's not appreciating his recognition. He just really feels strongly about, you know, the success and the innovation of Chic. And I think that you would really enjoy that article. So I will put it in the show notes.
Thank you. I definitely want to check that out. And he spoke a lot about that. Basically, it's such a fascinating musical history. It's almost hard to imagine today, but, you know, in the 70s, disco ruled. Disco was selling millions and millions and millions of albums. And then I think it was in 78 or 79, this disco sucks movement started. And like baseball stadiums and DJs had these events where disco albums were burned and smashed. And Nile Rodgers talked in the show about how it seemed very anti-woman, very anti-minority, very anti-gay, because it was basically kind of white rock and roll fans kind of embracing this, let's burn these disco records. It was really weird, but it had such an effect that Chic, which was his amazing band that had so many hits, Freak Out and Good Times, mm-hmm. and so many others, they never had another one hit record after the Disco Sucks movement.
Yeah, he actually discusses that, and he discusses how big of a hit La Freak is. And he's just, you know what it is, after kind of skimming through the whole thing and reading some of it, basically he is going to appreciate being, you know, singled out for this award for musical excellence. But he just literally made an entire case for Chic to get nominated in this entire interview, which is he like gives so much history. You are so, it's incredible. And it's just like, he's a genius for doing this, because if anybody reads it in Rolling Stone of all places,
right,
they're like, you know what, maybe we should think about Chic next year for 2018.
Well, you know what, they've been nominated a ridiculous number of times and they've never been voted in. So yeah, I don't really love the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because there's so many, I know there's so many artists, and it'll take time, but there are so many weird exclusions, you know. Yeah, I don't love them. but good for them for giving Nile Rodgers this award.
Yes, definitely.
So, it's definitely one of those music icons who I want everyone to know about and to love and appreciate, you know, even if you don't love. But I feel like if you don't love Madonna, maybe you love David Bowie. If you don't love Duran Duran, maybe you love Thompson Twins. You know, he worked with everybody.
He worked with everybody. Yeah. I think I read he worked with INXS too.
Yes, he did.
Love INXS.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Can you do me a favor?
Mm?
Can you make a Nile Rodgers playlist for us on Spotify, please?
Oh yeah, that already exists on Spotify.
No, but that you made?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me about this stuff, Sean?
And I'm going to post it in the show notes. I made a Best of Nile Rodgers playlist on Spotify. And
thank you.
You know, it has everything in there. Like a Virgin. Yep. Yeah, nice. I'll definitely
holding share out that on with me, geez.
You and the listeners.
Why don't you share with me?
I'm sorry.
So needy. All right.
All right.
And now it's time for the big sell. This is the segment where one of us shares something that we're enjoying in pop culture with the other, and then we come back and report on it the following week with a nice little review. Last week, I sold Sean a video that was recorded at the Women's March in DC, and it was a beautiful song called I Can't Keep Quiet, sung by a group of women who most of them had never met each other before, and they practiced the song at their own homes, and they came together at the march. The song is originally recorded by a singer named Milk, and she was there as well. And I can't wait to hear what you think of this song.
I think a lot of this song. I think I'm incapable of not giving this song 4 stars. I believe in everything. Sean, why do you hate women? You only gave this song 3/4 stars. I give this song 4 stars, Amita. Not because I love women. I love women who have rights. And seriously, I do love everything that the song symbolizes. Mm-hmm. Right? I love that it came together. I love that it sprung up from the need to protest. And yeah, it's just great. Love the harmonies. I loved the harmonies. I loved how kind of the women came together and harmonized. Loved seeing the diversity of faces in the crowd.
So beautiful.
Yeah. So it's great. I give it 4 stars because of everything it symbolizes. Will I hum this song 6 months from now? Probably not, but in of the moment, it's incredible. So 4 stars for me.
Nice. You know, it's funny you said, will you hum it in a few months? I think I would, actually. It definitely stuck with me. And I can still hear the song in my head right now being harmonized on that street. So that was definitely a testament to the power of that song.
Yeah. You know what? I would love to be proven wrong, corrected. There are songs that start out like this song as protest songs, and they become ingrained in the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. and they go down as classic protest songs. So this could happen with this song. That would be wonderful and beautiful.
I agree.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Mm. So what do you have for me this week, Mr. Johnson?
Well, Ms. Patel, I have some music for you, but I'm going to take you back I'd love to big sell a classic jazz vocalist to you.
Ooh.
She's someone I've been listening to a lot lately. I think we've spoken recently about having the type of pop culture resolution to listen to classics. We did that last year. I think we kind of talked about it this year too. And so The woman I would like to big sell to you, her name is Abby Lincoln. And she's someone who the name isn't recognizable to the general populace the way Billie Holiday or Ella Fitzgerald or Sarah Vaughan or Nina Simone.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not as well known as all of those deserving jazz divas, but she, I would say, is just as great. She sang in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s through into the 2000s. She was married to Max Roach for a time. I came across her. I went to a concert about 4 months ago, and the concert was about jazz protest music, and it was dedicated to 3 singers, Joni Mitchell, Nina Simone, and Abby Lincoln. So they put her in that category of Joni Mitchell and Nina Simone. And so I started listening to her recently, and she's just got this beautiful, powerful, soulful voice. And so I would love to big sell an album of hers to you called African Lady.
Okay. This is exciting. Yeah. It's funny. When you said her name, I'm like, why have I heard of her? And now I'm going to have to figure out why I've heard of this woman. I'm excited because I don't really know her. Hopefully listening to this album will make me realize why.
It's such an exciting discovery when you discover someone. You know, there are times, I think we've spoken about this before, where, like, let's say I'll listen to Norah Jones' album five times, and then I'll say, maybe before I listen to her album again, I should listen to someone who inspired her or a forerunner of her. So maybe I should go back and listen to Abby Lincoln. So I like every once in a while to discover some classic original. And it's exciting when you discover someone like that and enjoy them. So Abby Lincoln, African Lady, it's on Spotify, not our sponsor, but they should be.
They really should be. Hey, Spotify, shout out again.
Don't give them a shout out. We're not giving you any more shout out, Spotify, until, well, we'll talk about it.
But I did find that Nile Rodgers playlist, and I already followed it on Spotify. Okay, wait, sorry, I did that. I broke our rule. I broke the rule already.
Wait, what's the rule?
Not to mention Spotify again. And we did it again. Right. Yo, but that playlist is great, though. Sorry.
Thank you. The diversity of Nile Rodgers' output. It's remarkable. Okay. Tangent City, welcome.
All right, well, that is it for us this week, but we are gearing up for a very busy February. Next week, as we said before, we're going to find out who won the Directors Guild Award for Best Picture, and we are going to discuss Lady Gaga's Super Bowl performance. I can't wait. Can you?
Yes, but I cannot wait for her.
I knew you were going to say this.
Skylar Singers singing America the Beautiful.
Oh my God.
Why are they really trying to get me to watch Super Bowl? When I found out that Lady Gaga was performing the halftime show, I really said, oh good, I'm completely free of watching the Super Bowl. Let me try to make reservations at Olmsted in Brooklyn or just some restaurant that's really hard to get reservations to. I'm out. Then all of a sudden they have to come up and say, guess who's singing America the Beautiful? The Skylar Sisters. So now at least I have to watch that, and then I'm going to go off to
restaurant. Still fit in dinner. And don't you worry, I will update you on everything else in the biggest night of football.
Okay. But of course, for the listeners, I will make any sacrifice and watch that damn show for...
Oh, after dinner.
Give you my passionate expert opinion.
It's great. This is really
what has happened to me?
I don't know.
What is happening to me?
You it's were like so I'm earnest at the beginning of the podcast. I don't know what's going on.
It's like I'm trying not to have listeners. Okay.
How quickly does he turn?
Okay, here we go. Hey, guys, keep listening, and maybe you'll hear me have a nervous breakdown on the show. That would be exciting.
You know when that's going to happen?
It's beginning right now.
It might. You know when it would actually happen? Probably the Grammy Awards. So the Grammy Awards are coming up in a couple weeks, and we'll be commenting on that. And maybe Sean will have a breakdown then.
Nice segue. There's so much more. Still in February, Super Bowl, Grammys... And then, of course, it's the Oscars, end of February. So it's a really intense, wonderful, lovely month for pop culture. We'll be here every week giving you our opinion, giving you all of the insider, behind-the-scenes access and information that we can get our hands on. It's going to be a super fun month to be a pop culture fan and to be a fan of Inside Pop.
I'm a fan. I'm actually an Inside Pop, but I'm a fan, and I can't wait. This is a really fun month. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram @PopInsiders.
throughout the month, we'll have tons of updates, and we'll be retweeting and hopefully talking to you guys about who won what and who didn't want to win what and all of that, and how angry and possibly on the verge of a nervous breakdown Sean is becoming. And also head over to our website, insidepoppodcast.com, and listen to old episodes of Sean pre-nervous breakdown, and subscribe to this lovely podcast.
What you hear now is the sound of chaos unfolding. So, in my mind, everyone, have a great week. Take care of each other, and we'll see you next time on Inside Pop.
Bye.